Yeah, they all have massive investments in these games, and they want them to come off well. They need to cooperate with each other.
The price of pushback at the Beijing Olympic Games. It's Friday, February 4th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, an international call for humanitarian aid to Myanmar. U.S. lawmakers weigh sanctions against Russia. Pacific Kingdom of Tonga faces a new challenge. COVID side effects that won't let go. Sleep tracking for answers. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The 2022 Beijing Olympics kicked off today, but even before the opening ceremony, these games faced some hurdles. VOA's Penelope Palou has more.
The International Olympic Committee has the honor to announce the host city of the Olympic Winter Games 2022. Beijing.
91 nations participate in the Beijing Olympics with a total of 109 events across 15 sports. In Beijing, Olympic officials have imposed strict protocols to prevent the spread of COVID. Tickets will not be sold to the public. Beijing has announced a closed-loop system where athletes and others involved in the Olympics will work, compete, eat, and sleep without coming into contact with the general public. All vaccinated participants can move freely in games-related areas by a dedicated transport system. Unvaccinated athletes will have to spend 21 days in quarantine ahead of the games. Domestic and international participants will be tested daily. But COVID-19 is not the only hurdle for the Beijing Olympics. According to the Washington Post, a coalition of international activists has pressed for a boycott of what they are calling the #2022 Genocide Olympics, citing China's treatment of Uyghurs and other ethnic minorities in China's northern province of Xinjiang.
The Biden administration will not send any diplomatic or official representation to the Beijing 2022 Winter Olympics and Paralympic Games, given the PRC's ongoing genocide and crimes against humanity in Xinjiang and other human rights abuses.
According to China's state-owned broadcaster, CCTV, Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokesperson Wang Wenbin criticized the politicization of the Beijing Olympics. Despite the global outcry against Beijing's human rights abuses, neither the apolitical International Olympic Committee nor NBCU, the Olympics' exclusive broadcaster in the U.S., will take a stand against Beijing, says Andrew Zimbalist, professor of economics at Smith College.
Yeah, they all have massive investments in these games, and they want them to come off well. They need to cooperate with each other.
Zimbalist, who has published several books on the economics of the Olympic Games, points out that China wields great influence on international markets, which do not want to ruffle Beijing's feathers.
On the one hand, you have markets like the United States, where people want you to be uttering phrases and following policies that are congruent with human values. On the other hand, you've got a country that's violating those values. But it's, you know, you're selling $15 billion of goods to them every year, or you actually have an investment as a partner in some of their activities. And so how do you steer course in between those two things? It's delicate.
According to Variety.com, NBCU is facing a huge challenge on attracting eyeballs to the event, not only because of China's human rights violations, but also because 6 months after the Summer Olympics in Tokyo, spectators are going through what it calls Olympic Games fatigue.
And also, whenever the games are held on the other side of the world from the United States, it means there's a timing issue, so that when you're watching the competition generally, you're not watching it live. And that's always disappointing to sports fans. You don't want to find out the result of something that happened 12 hours earlier.
However, Zimbalist says most viewers do not bring a political mindset to the questions of whether they are going to follow the Olympic Games. They do it, he says, for the thrill of the games, the competition, and the teams they root for. Penelope Poulou, VOA News, Washington.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. New Zealand plans to ease its tough COVID-19 border controls. Journalists use burner phones to protect privacy at Beijing Olympics. Cambodia says Myanmar's junta foreign minister not invited to upcoming ASEAN meeting. Beijing bubble offers rare and temporary oasis of media freedom. Wife, aunt of North Korean leader make rare public appearance. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are all on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The United Nations is calling on Myanmar's military authority to allow unimpeded delivery of life-saving humanitarian aid to millions of people suffering from conflict, poverty, acute hunger, and ill health. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Conflict and insecurity are raging in many parts of Myanmar. 1 year after the military coup toppled the democratically elected government, UN officials warn the country is moving towards civil war. The United Nations reports the growing crisis has plunged an estimated 14.4 million people into destitution. In response to this deteriorating situation, the UN has appealed for a record $826 million to provide relief for 6.2 million people. Jens Laerke is spokesman for the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. He says the economic and political turmoil sparked by last year's coup, combined with the devastating impact of COVID-19, have driven half of Myanmar's 25 million population into poverty.
Many can no longer afford to feed their families because of job and income losses and price increases. Over 13 million people are moderately or severely food insecure, and malnutrition is expected to worsen among children unless we support the parents to provide enough nutritious food for their kids.
The UN reports more than 400,000 people have been displaced since the military takeover. It says thousands are living in appalling conditions, while many others have fled to Thailand and India in search of refuge. Laerke acknowledges the UN is asking for a lot of money to support its humanitarian operation in Myanmar without any guarantee it will be able to reach those in need. He explains the appeal is based on need and not on the ability to deliver aid.
It goes without saying that the relationship with the authorities are not particularly rosy. We hear that from everybody. We are particularly trying to deliver aid in urban areas, which is kind of a new caseload in this crisis, the urban population and the urban needs of particular concern.
The UN Human Rights Office has documented 1,500 civilian deaths since last year's coup. It reports people were killed during street protests or when security forces raided homes or villages in search of opponents. It adds that approximately 200 people have been killed due to torture while in military custody. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, U.S. lawmakers near a deal on Russian sanctions. Happening now in Asia. South Korea broke its single-day record for new coronavirus cases on Thursday, reporting 22,907 new infections. It is the second consecutive day South Korea has reported more than 20,000 cases within the space of 24 hours. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. So happy you've decided to join us here on VOA Asia. U.S. lawmakers are nearing a deal on sanctions to deter Russian President Vladimir Putin from invading Ukraine. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson spoke with several lawmakers who have just returned from a trip to Kyiv.
Some 127,000 Russian troops now massed along Ukraine's borders as Russian President Vladimir Putin tells the world his demands, including a promise Ukraine will never join the NATO alliance, have not been met. U.S. lawmakers are now preparing a range of sanctions to deter conflict in Europe. Democratic Senator Kristen Gillibrand.
There's certainly no interest in escalating this situation into any military conflict. We are hopeful this can be dealt with on a multilateral basis diplomatically. I think this is absolutely possible, and I'm hopeful that President Biden will be able to do that successfully.
Congressional Republicans have criticized the Biden administration for not moving quickly to deter Putin. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Sanctions after the incursion are less effective than sanctions before. And I hope the administration will bear that in mind as they move forward. They have a lot of latitude on their own.
But in a rare show of unity on Capitol Hill, lawmakers from both parties are moving forward on bipartisan sanctions legislation that would severely impact Putin's economic options. Republican Representative Mark Green.
He'd have to get his oil sold like Saddam Hussein sold his oil, you know, on the black market. I mean, that would be his only way to get oil out because he can't do a bank transaction. That's probably the most devastating of the sanctions. You know, anti-tank, anti-armor, lethal stuff, that's going to be video images that the Russian people are going to see. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to ask themselves, is that something they want?
Democrats want to reserve one of the most severe sanctions for use only if Putin goes into Ukraine. Democratic Representative Ami Bera.
Should Mr. Putin invade, you know, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline is not going to go through and, you know, probably never will come to completion. And that's going to have a huge economic impact on Russia. We will also probably implement, with broad bipartisan support, the biggest set of sanctions that we ever have. Now, none of us wants to do that because we understand that impacts the Russian people. But this is an elective choice that Mr. Putin is making.
Members of Congress who recently traveled to Ukraine and met with officials say American aid will arm the Ukrainians facing the Russian threat. They also found unity among America's allies. Democratic Representative Mickey Sherrill.
What struck me is, and I'm sure this is an unintended consequence of Putin's aggression, what struck me is the unity, that as we went to Brussels first and met with our EU counterparts and members of NATO leadership, how united we all were in standing against this type of aggression and in favor of a democratic nation fighting for freedom.
The United States has announced it will soon send 2,000 troops to Romania, Poland, and Germany. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg welcomed the additional 3,000 U.S. troops now being moved to Poland, Romania, and Germany as tensions continue to grow between Russia and Ukraine. Stoltenberg tweeted Wednesday, "This is a powerful signal of U.S. commitment." VOA's Carla Babb discussed the situation with Pentagon spokesperson John Kirby.
Look, I would argue that already there's a feeling of some pressure inside the alliance to make sure that it is clear to Mr. Putin how seriously all the allies take our mutual defense requirements. So I would, and I've said this in the past, I mean, some of the options we're exploring could involve the movement of U.S. troops before an invasion. We've got to make sure that that not only do we send a strong signal about NATO solidarity, but that the alliance really is solidly prepared to defend itself if needed. And I think it's important not just for Mr. Putin to see that and hear that, but for the allies to see and hear that. And that's what we're working through right now, some of those options. And you're right, if he does invade again, the United States has promised severe economic consequences. And this is an economy, though, while it's doing okay, better this year than last year, it's still vulnerable to powerful sanctions. And the president has said we're not, you know, we're willing to consider economic consequences that we weren't willing to consider, that we weren't willing to put on the table back in 2014.
You can read and see much more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
Happening now in Asia. Pakistan says security forces have successfully blocked overnight militant attacks on two army bases in southwestern Balochistan province. 7 soldiers and 15 others have died. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Tonga went into COVID-19 lockdown Wednesday as it recovers from last month's devastating volcanic eruption and tsunami. The Pacific archipelago has reported 2 cases of coronavirus after previously recording just a single infection last October. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
2 dock workers handling humanitarian aid in Tonga have tested positive for COVID-19. The international relief effort is like no other as Tonga recovers from one disaster while trying to avoid another. It has strict no-contact protocols that act as a barrier to prevent transmission of the new coronavirus from foreign navy ships and aircraft to the Tongan people. But those defences appear to have been breached, and the Pacific archipelago will go into lockdown for at least 2 days starting Wednesday. Australia's Navy vessel HMAS Adelaide unloaded supplies last week despite a coronavirus outbreak that infected more than 20 of its crew. Britain, France, New Zealand and the United States have also been delivering essential supplies. Tongan journalist Marion Kupu told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that 2 infected port staff had worked closely with aid shipments.
We're talking about people who are there on first hand when we have ships or aircraft coming into Tonga, offloading cargoes, and also they're the front line. They're the first person, first contact with anything landing here in Tonga. We just need to protect their identity while they work on trying to find or to trace where they've been in the past few days.
Tonga has a population of just over 100,000. It closed its borders in early 2020 as the coronavirus pandemic swept the globe. Since then, the island nation has diagnosed just 1 case of COVID-19 in a man who returned from New Zealand in October last year and has since fully recovered. The volcanic blast, 65 kilometres north of the Tongan capital of Nuku'alofa, was one of the biggest recorded in decades, generating massive tsunami waves and blanketing the island nation in toxic ash. 3 people died. The United Nations said last week that drinking water remained the main challenge facing Tonga. An undersea communications cable that connects the archipelago to the rest of the world was damaged in the volcanic eruption. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Making headlines in Asia. The Wall Street Journal reports China is building extensive barriers along its 3,000-mile southern border. Beijing says the purpose is to fight the spread of COVID-19 by limiting the entry of traders, workers, and smugglers. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia. Chronic fatigue, brain fog, insomnia, heart problems, and difficulties breathing. These are just some of the symptoms of long COVID. Lucia Buckeletz looked into what long COVID really is and how U.S. doctors are treating the condition. Anna Rice narrates her story.
Even after recovering from COVID-19, many people report lingering effects for months later. According to a report by Fair Health, a nonprofit organization focused on transparency in healthcare, about 15 to 20% of those who have contracted the virus continue to have symptoms months later. 14-year-old Sienna from Cleveland got COVID about a year ago.
My smells came back, but they came back all like completely different, like distorted and everything. So like regular foods tasted like I always describe it as burning rubber, like this really weird smell.
Doctors call such a long rehabilitation process long COVID. The World Health Organization calls the lingering symptoms post-COVID.
It occurs in individuals with a history of probable or confirmed SARS-CoV-2 infection, usually 3 months from the onset of the COVID-19, with symptoms that last for at least 2 months and cannot be explained by an alternative diagnosis.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention lists 18 common symptoms, including cough, headaches, shortness of breath, insomnia, heart palpitations, and oftentimes chronic fatigue.
Fatigue is a really common symptom. It's a really dominant one. And the fatigue often is coupled with what patients describe as, quote, brain fog, which would be difficulty concentrating, cognitive issues, cloudiness.
Dr. Linda Jiang works with post-COVID patients at a Stanford University clinic. One challenge is making sure these common symptoms are post-COVID and not something else.
And there's a clear time correlation of persistence of symptoms that they didn't have before COVID, and there weren't other coinciding events that occurred or health changes, then it sort of eliminates the other possibilities.
The number of long COVID centers has mushroomed across the U.S. Social media support groups are also helping patients deal with the mental impact of post-COVID symptoms. Experts say mood swings, anxiety, and depression are very common. Former nurse Lainey Bond says her support group gains an additional 1,500 people a week.
We're really focused on what we would call a nursing patient education.
The U.S. National Institutes of Health have launched a $470 million project aimed at learning more about post-COVID symptoms and finding a treatment. For Леся Бакалец in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Getting a good night's sleep can be elusive, but sleep tracking, rings, watches, and even mattresses may offer insight into how to get a better night's sleep. Michelle Quinn reports.
Tossing and turning, awake in the middle of the night. Humans spend about a third of their lives sleeping, or trying to. Sleep tracking technology may offer a window into what's keeping them up. 8Sleep sells a so-called smart mattress. Vibration-detecting piezoelectric sensors are packed into the mattress bedding.
They act almost like a stethoscope, where it's picking up on all the different vibrations at the different frequencies that your body is emitting throughout the night.
An algorithm sifts through the night's data for information on body temperature, number of breaths taken, rollovers, and resting heart rate. The next morning, users check their sleep app to see how they did in the various stages of sleep. Louisa Nicola, a neuroscientist and brain performance coach who has a partnership with 8Sleep, says the rise of sleep trackers like watches, rings, and smart mattresses are giving people valuable information about their sleep health.
You had 15 tosses and turns. We noticed that you got up during the night. So then you can really, you know, gauge an understanding of, you can break apart your sleep and figure out what's going on during those 8 hours.
For example, people don't sleep as well with their pets in bed as they think they do. 8Sleep's data show while they sleep slightly longer, sleep quality is lower.
The pet in the bed is to have an impact, probably because the pet is also moving during the night. And we see the same with partners. So when you're sharing the bed with someone, people who go to bed together and get out of bed together, they will sleep better.
In the future, the company hopes to add more sensors to its mattress to detect changes in a person's body beyond sleep, information that might point to potential health issues. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia.
Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. Enjoy the day.